Are you ready? Sea of Red, it's time for another episode of Fireside Chat.
It's late July, and nobody except for Matt and I are thinking about hockey, but here we are again for another episode of Fireside Chat. How you doing, buddy?
Good. Nice to take a break from enjoying the sunshine out there and talk hockey again.
There hasn't been much sunshine today. It's been raining here all day.
It's nice and sunny where I am, so I got a little bit of a break.
There you go. Well, we talked last just after the rookie development camp and talked pretty much specifically about that camp. So we figured we would come back and chat a little bit about what's gone on with the Flames as an organization this summer and the players that have come, that have gone, that sort of thing. So, Matt, why don't we kind of start chronologically? And I think we did a show just after the draft, so the first chronological thing that would have happened was July 1st free agency. Just before free agency opened, we saw that the Flames signed their first RFA, which was Dougie Hamilton, to a six-year, $5.75 million per year deal, which is about a $35 million contract. What do you think of that deal?
For the caliber of player that Hamilton is, that's a bargain. And especially moving forward, it's similar to the TJ Brody deal, where each of those contracts, like 3, 4, or 5 years from now, will be one of the reasons why the Flames are able to remain a very good team.
For those that don't know, TJ Brody has a contract 1 year shorter than Hamilton's, and he's making $4,650,000 a year. So Hamilton's getting paid more than Brody, which I think is about right. He's also making more than Giordano, which I know Brody said that he wanted to make sure that his contract wasn't more than Gio's. Matt, how do you think that the Hamilton contract is going to affect Gio's next contract?
Not at all. And I don't know exactly how the Giordano contract's going to break down yet. Like, we've heard $9 million being thrown out there. We've also heard the Flames are looking more in the 7 range. So, we'll see. I don't see that being much of a factor either way. If the Flames do re-sign Giordano, I expect him to be the highest paid player on the team.
We knew that the Flames were going to get the Dougie Hamilton deal done. They had to. I mean, they traded away such a large quantity of picks and valuable picks for him, but I was really surprised how reasonable the deal was. I was expecting Hamilton to make somewhere in the $6.5 to $8 million a year range.
Yeah, I could see that, and it's a good thing that the Flames managed to get him under $6 million, and that will pay dividends when guys like Monahan, Gaudreau, Bennett, and even more down the road when other players like Poirier come in and Jankowski and all those guys come in and need new contracts, that little bit of savings will make a difference.
Since we're in arbitration season here in the NHL, it's going to help drive down arbitration values if we ever need to arbitrate any of our defensemen as well, because if they're comparable to Dougie Hamilton, there's a lower contract there.
Exactly.
So Hamilton got signed. The next guy that got signed, and I was quite shocked by this, I think it was just minutes before unrestricted free agency opened, the Flames announced that they'd signed Kerry Ramo to a one-year, $3.8 million deal. You and I have talked a lot about the goaltending here and who we think might come and go. I expected Ramo to walk. What were you thinking?
Yeah, same here. And the fact that the Flames signed Ramo is actually interesting because of the fact that you and I have both complained about Yanni Ortio's poor starts in the beginning of the seasons, the last 2 years. So I think having Ramo back is just an insurance marker in case Ortio does not perform well again.
Yeah, I think it gives us options. You know, the more quality goalies we have, the more ways we can go. And maybe they were finding that there weren't a lot of teams that were interested in acquiring Hiller.
That's very possible.
So maybe they knew that there was a lot of teams that wanted to sign Ramo as a free agent. So they figured if they bring him back in, they could flip him again if they need to.
Exactly. And when it comes time to head into training camp, injuries always happen. And there's usually one or two goalie injuries around the league that happen. So if, say, Ordeo plays really good and is looking ready to be in the NHL at the start of the year, you can flip either Ramo or Hiller, you know, to a team that does need a goalie, and you're okay. And if Ordeo's playing bad, then you just put him on waivers and send him to Stockton to start the year.
I don't think he's going to make it through waivers.
Well, I would have thought the same thing about Jakob Markstrom. And, like, if Ordeo plays bad, I don't see a team claiming him. Like, Markstrom, he actually played really well last preseason. And, like, I thought for sure that somebody was going to sign him or claim him, and nobody did. So, I don't think it's as much of a problem if the Flames do put Ordeo on waivers, but I don't think they will if he plays well in training camp.
See, I think if they're worried about his start, they'd probably just keep him up here. But we'll see. I think the fact Ramo signed a one-year deal is kind of telling, too. The fact that now both of our goaltenders have 1 year left on their deal, I think it's really kind of the Flames' way of saying we don't know what the future holds here, or the future is not these guys. And, you know, we're just kind of using them as a stopgap. And when we saw Ramo sign for a year, I thought, both he and the Flames, I think, know the writing's on the wall that the goalie situation is going to be changing.
Yeah, well, you have all of Ramo, Ortio, and Hiller on one-year contracts, and this is the last year for all of those players. So it's really up to each of those goalies to earn another contract beyond this season. And with having Jonathan Gillies in the Stockton team this year, like, he's a pretty good goalie himself, so, like, he'll be knocking on the door, especially if he gets off to a good start. So, you know, it's a put-up-or-shut-up time for all the Flames goaltenders.
It's interesting that if you look at the Jonas Hiller-Kari Ramo pair, which right now is our NHL goalie tandem, we have about $8.5 million going to our goaltenders, $8.3 million. And really, I mean, we have two great goaltenders for that price, and there's a lot of teams that are almost paying that just for one starter.
Yeah, well, the thing is that most teams, like, identify their guy, like, say, Jonathan Quick in Los Angeles, and they don't really care who the backup is as long as they're not bad. So, you know, the Flames, they don't have that guy like Kiprusoff, so they need to spread it around a little better.
For sure. So, I was surprised that they got the Ramo deal done, especially before UFA opened. I thought he'd at least want to shop around and see what kind of a deal he could get, but I'm pleased he's coming back just because I think it gives us the most possible options, and especially if we have to upgrade another position, it gives us an asset that I think is very movable.
Exactly, and especially with the excess forwards that the Flames have, if you find a team that's requiring both a extra forward and goaltender, you might be able to get a better asset than you would if you only had one.
I was almost going to say, but it's not going to be this year. You leave one of them exposed in the expansion draft, but that's a few years out.
Exactly.
So once the bell rang, if you will, on the start of free agency day, we saw a lot of interesting moves happening. I don't know about you, but to me, I was surprised the guys were moving. It didn't seem as quickly as they have in the past. We didn't see, you know, the first 7 deals or 8 deals like we usually do announced within minutes.
Yeah, and I thought the whole UFA period was a little slow, and the fact is that there's quite a few players that are still out there looking for contracts that are quite shocking.
Yeah. And we'll chat about that a bit later, but if we take a look at who the Flames did bring in, the Flames upgraded their winger depth. They brought in Michael Frolik, who previously has been in Winnipeg, to a 5-year, $4.3 million cap hit per year. What do you think of those numbers?
It's one of those things that to get a quality second, third line winger, the 4.3 is about right on target. He is an excellent possession player. He gives it his all every shift. He's not necessarily the most skilled player, otherwise he'd be making another $3 or $4 million a year. but he's a serviceable... He's basically a winger version of Michael Backlund, and that's always usable.
I'm quite happy with the deal. I think 4.3 is a reasonable deal. I think that they're definitely giving Frolik kind of the benefit of the doubt. I think almost like they did with Hudler when they brought him in, they gave him a bit higher contract than maybe other teams would have, but said, you know, we're kind of expecting you to live up to this. I like that we're getting another right winger because we've been short right wingers on the team for a while, and I like Frolik. I mean, I've seen him play not as much as I'd like to, but I've seen him play in the past, and I think he'll fit in well here. I think that he is filling a need, and I think Tre Living did a good job to go out and say, I need a second line winger, and that's Frolik, and I don't doubt that he'll be given an option to do more on the team. Maybe he'll jump up to the first line on power plays or penalty kills, but I think he's definitely going to be a very serviceable right winger.
Well, he definitely fits the mantra of never quit. And for sure. Like every time I've watched Frolik, he's always giving it 100%. So that's always a usable thing in bringing a UFA player in.
And you were mentioning Michael Backlund. I can see him actually getting a lot of ice time with Backlund this year.
Yeah, so could I. Like a good, solid, checking third line defensive line, possibly.
And I believe that he actually has a no trade clause at some point in that contract, Frolik.
I wouldn't doubt it. Most of them do. At least a limited no trade clause.
Yeah, I think it's limited no trade. So, I mean, you know, for all we know, that says you can't trade me to Edmonton.
Pretty much.
We just don't know exactly what the details of that are. For those that don't know a lot about Frolik, he is a first-round draft pick. He was picked 10th overall in 2006 by Florida. He's from the Czech Republic. He's 27 years old, 6'1", 200 pounds, and he's a natural right winger, which is something that the Flames need. So,
yeah, unfortunately, he shoots left-handed.
And we've also seen him play left wing and center as well, so I think he's a fairly, utility forward, I guess.
Yeah. Anytime you can get somebody that can play any position at a quality level, you know, that's what you need.
Now, Matt, I know in our last time that we talked, two episodes ago, when we were previewing UFA, Frolik wasn't the first name that came to your mind as far as who you wanted the Flames to sign for a forward. You wanted Williams. What do you think of Frolik instead?
I can't complain whatsoever. Like, you're getting somebody that, when his contract is done, he'll still be younger than Williams is now. So, it's one of those things that you don't have to worry about his play falling off a cliff.
Yeah. And I think Frolik is also at the same kind of spot Yari Hudler was when we signed him, is he was sort of playing second fiddle on a team and needed a place to break out. And I think Frolik might be able to do that here. And then on a five-year deal, I'm not convinced he'll stay a Flame for all 5 years because I think that he might show his worth and we might be able to get some value out of him before the 5 years are up.
Well, it also depends on the cap as well. Like, moving forward, like, you look at the core players for the Flames, which are Gaudreau, Monahan, Bennett, Brody, and Hamilton. If you're extending all of them, you might not necessarily be able to afford a $4.3 million cap hit to a second, third line winger. So it's one of those things that it depends on what happens 2, 3, 4 years from now.
Yeah, and it also depends on what Frolik shows. I mean, he may break out and show us that he has the capability to be a first line guy.
Exactly. We won't know until we get there. So it's positive now. We'll see how it goes moving forward.
And the other player the Flames signed in free agency, the free agent frenzy, if you will, which was sort of off the board, I think. We were all waiting for another big splash. And they went out and signed Derek Grant. Derek Grant's a centerman. He's played most of his whole pro career, actually, with Binghamton. He was drafted by Ottawa and played, I think, 5 games in Ottawa. And this, to me, is really just a depth signing. I mean, I don't think there's any chance Grant starts in Calgary. He'll be sort of like our Corey Potter of the forwards, where he'll be in the AHL, but also sort of just a more veteran guy in Stockton.
Yeah, I don't honestly think that he'll ever play in Calgary. I think that he's more the veteran go-to guy that you keep down in Stockton to have all the wingers play with him to generate offense down there. Because that's one of the things that caused the Adirondack Flames to miss the playoffs was a lack of veteran forwards. And getting Grant will help that in a way.
Yeah, you could very well be right. I mean, we saw last year where at certain points there were a lot of players that got called up to Calgary and they just didn't have enough capable bodies. So even if he does stay in the AHL, he is on a two-way deal. He's a one-year, $700,000 two-way deal. Yeah, he probably just provides a capable body at center all year long.
Well, like last year in January when the Flames traded Corbin Knight, the next game, Bill Arnold went down with injury, so two of their four centers got ousted one right after another, and they didn't really have a solution to fix that. And you saw like Adirondack just go on like the lengthy losing streak after that because they had no options. So whether that is to be an insurance policy or not, we'll see. And like, I've never watched Derek Grant specifically, so I don't know his skill set or not, but we'll see.
The fact it's a one-year deal sort of leads me to believe that it's an insurance policy. This isn't a guy that they're thinking is going to be a long-term solve for the Flames. And really, you see players in that role, that sort of veteran AHL role, who do move around every couple of years. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he's here this year and then he ventures off somewhere else. So Matt, as far as I guess really just Frolik, because Frolik is the only big UFA we signed, and if we throw Ramo and Hamilton in there, as of July 1 ending, how do you think the Flames made out?
They addressed their needs. They needed to get a good number three defenseman, and they needed to get a good middle six right winger. Because you have David Jones that could fill the other spot, so between the two, that you can't really ask for much better.
I think I'd say they filled their needs, but also, and I think maybe more important at this stage, is they give themselves options. You know, if we need to move somebody out, we've now got a capable winger. We might be able to move up the lineup. We give ourselves options in net. We give ourselves options with defensive pairing. So I think for sure they filled needs, but I think they're giving themselves a lot of interesting things that they could do or try this year as well.
And when you come to training camp, with the glut of forwards that the Flames have, you allow a healthy competition just like last year, where the top players rose to the top and guys like Juris made the team. So it's always good to have that competition because, you know, you'll be able to separate the good players from the not so good players.
For sure. Really, Frolik and Hamilton are the only two new Flames, if you will. We do have a bunch of signings, however. Most of them are re-signings. The Flames didn't actually have any arbitration cases this year. They had a bunch of guys that filed for arbitration, but everything got done before we got to the arbitration point. So Josh Juris will be back on a one-year deal worth $975,000 one way, which probably shows that the team is excited about having him back and thinks he's got NHL potential again. Turner Elson's coming back on a one-year deal. Bill Arnold's coming back on a one-year deal. Kenny Agostino's back on a one-year deal. Bryce Van Brabrandt is back on a one-year deal, which that one sort of surprises me. Drew Shore's back on a one-year deal. And Paul Byron's back on a one-year $900,000 deal. Any of those really surprising to you that those guys signed with the Flames?
Not really. Like, even Van Brabrandt, you need to have guys in at Stockton that can play a more physical style of game, and he does bring that, especially with losing both McGrattan and Wolf. We'll need some physicality down there.
I think because we only have, like, you were saying earlier before we went on the show here, 43 or 44 contracts, I think Van Brabrandt was doable. if we're buttoned up at the 48-49 contract mark, I think you'd just get the AHL to sign him to an AHL deal.
Probably.
But, yeah, I think Juris coming back in a 1 year is good. I think at $975,000, he's getting a raise over his $600,000 from last year, which he deserves. But still a deal that could be moved if we needed it to be. And really, Paul Byron, he's, if you think about it, Matt, he's the only piece left from the Robin Regier trade. And I think that he's probably exceeded expectations when he came in. So good for him for getting another deal.
Yeah, and I hope that this season he can not think so much when he's on breakaways, because he seems to screw himself out of the good chances that he gets.
I think part of his issue last year, too, might have been that he really didn't have consistent line mates all year. And maybe if they get him on a line with some consistent line mates he can build some chemistry with, we might see a little bit more out of Paul Byron.
Yeah, and if he even translates half of his breakaways into goals, he could be a 20-goal scorer.
For sure, yeah. Hopefully they're working with him this summer on breakaways. And the last contract the Flames signed for RFAs, bringing back Lance Boma, who I think we all knew was going to come back. I was surprised by the term on this one. He signed a 3-year deal at $2.2 million per year. Matt, what are your thoughts on that contract?
I think it's actually cheaper than I was expecting.
Really?
I recall us discussing him back in the season, and I used the comparable of Brandon Prust, and he makes $2.5 million per for the last 3 years, and I think that Boma's a very similar player, perhaps with some more offensive skill than Prust, but that same jelly mold of player. So 2.2, I'm not really surprised, and the term is fine.
I like Boma. I think we've all grown to like Boma, but I'm surprised by the dollar figure. At 2.2, I mean, if you look and put that in comparison, he's making over half of what Jari Hudler's making. He's making, you know, 2.2 compared to the, say, 3.5 that Backlund's making. I think for a guy who I think, you know, as much as we might like him, we can probably all agree he's a third, fourth line forward. I think it's a big deal, and I think that it might come back to haunt the Flames later on.
I don't. It's one of those things that you do need high-end depth players as well to win a championship. And Boma is a very top-end fourth-line player and a decent third-line player. And with his increased goal scoring from last year, if he can even hit 10 or more goals in each of the 3 years, the 2.2 will be nothing, really. It does seem a little high, but in context of both the cap and his direct comparables, it's not.
His direct comparables, maybe not, but I'm also looking at the precedent it sets on our roster. You've got a guy who next year in Joel Colborne is making 1.2 and will be an RFA. You've got someone like Paul Byron, Marcus Granlund. These guys might then be thinking they should be getting a big raise because, well, if he's making 2, I want to make 3.
Yeah, I don't see that because none of those players bring the same secondary things that Boma does. Like, nobody blocks shots other than Chris Russell like Boma. And none of them are as good at, with being physical other than Michael Ferland. And nobody can score at that level. Like, he brings, like, all three of those packages together where, like, say, a Colborne might get 16 goals, but he won't bring that physical element, or a Byron won't bring that physical element. So you're kind of paying for, like, three different types of players all in one, where those other guys are just one type.
So as much as you were saying earlier that Prost is being paid similarly to Boma, which you're right, I guess the question comes back to, do you think that Prust is being fairly paid?
Very much so.
Yeah.
I think that you need to have good players on your third and fourth lines. And, like, any successful team, like, if you look at Chicago, like, they had guys like Andrew Shaw, Brandon Saad, L.A. with guys like Jordan Nolan. You need those guys. And they, you know, the more that they bring, the more you have to pay them. And Bulma does bring three elements that, you know, most third, fourth line guys don't bring. They usually only get one or two. So you have to pay accordingly.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I guess I just look at where Prust was when he made that much, and I think that he was a little bit more established in his career. I'm not saying that we couldn't get we couldn't get Bulma to that point, but I think that right now we were overpaying for him. Now, it might turn out to be a great deal in the long run, especially near the end, but right now I look at it and go, ah, I think that he's being overpaid for being a, you know, a fourth line guy, or, you know, best a third line guy. So I'm hoping you're right, but when I saw it come down, I had a bad, sort of bad feeling in my stomach that this is going to be the, I guess after all the momentum that Treliving had built up and all the great deals he'd done, I just kind of looked at this and went, ah, maybe he didn't do so well in this one.
Well, the other thing that you have to look at is how much the cap has gone up. Like, it's gone from being 39 when it first came in to now, like, 72 or whatever it is. So a $2.2 million contract is more like a $1.2 from, like, 2005. So it does make a difference. Like, you have to look at, like, how things scaled from back, like, even a handful of years ago. Like, if, say, like, this was 2010 or 2011, and that contract was, say, like, 1.8, I don't think you or anybody else would be complaining about it. It's just the cap's gone up so much since then that it does cause everything to escalate.
That's a good way to look at it, I guess. I hope that Boma's going to have a good year this year and that, you know, he'll prove us right.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that, like, an average contract, if you have a 23-man roster, it's like $3 million, right? So he is making less than the average player by a third.
Yeah,
so
I guess most players, though, when you look at it, you can see more upside in them. Like, even when I look down the Flames roster, I can see guys who, okay, we're paying because maybe there's some upside there. And I guess when I look at Bulma, I think we've seen what Bulma is. I don't think there's a lot of upside left there, so we're paying for him as he is now.
And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, it's not.
And the thing is that if the Flames do come in a cap crunch and they absolutely need to move him, like, I'm sure there's 20-plus other teams that would be lining up to acquire him.
Oh, yeah, probably. But I guess it's just, yeah, it's the fact that at 2.2 and with the big contracts we need to re-sign, I think, I still think that he's overpaid.
Yeah, it's not much, though.
No, but it's still over. I guess it's just with all the head of steam we built up this summer and getting really great deals for, like, Hamilton, Frolik, and then, you know, to sign him for 2.2, I guess just a little bit disappointing to me.
I don't see it being that big of a deal, but
I hope you're right. I guess the only other big name player who is still in limbo for the Flames is Michael Ferland. Michael Ferland was qualified as a restricted free agent for the Flames, but is yet to sign a deal with the team. I think the fact that we have a guy like Josh Juris signed and Lance Bulma signed is really going to help try to figure out his number. But I guess the first question, do you think there's any question that the Flames get the Ferland deal done?
Oh, no. It'll get done. It's just probably taking a while for whatever reason. I don't see it. Like, I'm probably sure that it has to do with a one-way deal versus a two-way deal.
I think they're probably trying to deal with the guys who had arbitration first.
True. And now that, like, he's the only guy left, I'm sure that, like, in the next week or two, that'll get sorted out.
What do you think Michael Ferland's contract will look like?
I would say probably like 750, 800. Like, I don't see him making as much as either Juris or Byron yet. Just a one-year deal, though.
I think we're going to see him on a three-year, two-way deal at about $750. I don't know that he, like maybe Juris has proven that he's an NHL regular yet. But I think the Flames want to keep him around the organization. And with David Wolf moving back to Germany, I think that there's another sort of tough guy spot open in the organization.
Either way, it'll get done. Like, I'm not expecting him to hold out, because really, why would he?
Yeah, I don't see any reason why he's going to hold out. I guess it's just, yeah, now that everyone else is done, he's the only one left. We might as well go sign him now.
Yeah. Just a matter of getting the I's dotted and the T's crossed.
Yeah, and especially with how popular he was with fans in the playoffs, I think you gotta bring him back and look at him as potentially potentially a guy who can come back.
Yeah, starting this year right off the bat.
Yeah. He might not be a shoe-in for a spot, but I think he's one of the guys you're going to look at as a potential NHLer coming forward, because he did make a name for himself in the playoffs.
Yeah. And the thing is that the Flames have like 17 or 18 players that are on one-way contracts. So, and that's just amongst the forwards. So he'll be in tough competition with those players, but...
And that's why I think if I was his agent, I'd almost accept a two-way, because I think it gives him a little bit more lifespan in the organization, potentially.
Yeah, and we'll see. It's one of those things that it'll all come down to training camp, because we saw Juris beat out a couple of players last year that we weren't expecting. So if he comes in and plays his way onto the team, like a guy like Brandon Bolig might end up having to move out because of Ferland's performance. We just don't know.
Yeah, and I really don't think that we'll see a huge number of forward moves until training camp for that reason. I think that, you know, they want to kind of wait and see how everybody does when they hit the ice.
Exactly. And you can always put players in Stockton, even if temporarily. Sort of like how we had Setoguchi here for the beginning of last season until, like, other guys were ready, and then we brought them up instead.
So now that we know sort of, I guess, what the Flames roster looks like for next year with the players that are coming in, one of the other announcements this summer was that the Flames have announced the new jersey numbers for next year. And Matt, I think so. You and I have both talked about how much we hate the Brian Burke rule, if you will, of jersey numbers from only 1 to 35. Looks like it's been overruled by Brad Treliving. We've got jersey numbers all over the spectrum.
Yeah, there's just too many players that are possible NHL players and too few numbers. I think we only had like 3 or 4 numbers that were available.
Well, and to me, it's just stupid, too. Like, if a guy thinks he's going to play better wearing 47 or 90, 98 or whatever it might be, let him wear that.
Yeah, it's something that's a comfort thing. Like, yeah, Burke's right that it shouldn't matter, but, you know, psychological things do happen. And, you know, the player like, say, Frolik must really like 67, and he doesn't feel comfortable wearing something else. So why not?
And we know that hockey players are a superstitious bunch. I mean, you know, some of these guys put one, you know, shin pad on, always the right one before the left one. Should it matter? Not really. But to them, it does. And to me, if this is something that matters to them, let them go with it.
Yeah. What's the harm?
You know, like some of these guys, they had changed numbers. It's like there seemed to be no point to it. And it was almost like Brian Burke just showing he was the boss. The NHL is allowed any number from 1 to 98, so I figure if the NHL allows it, you might as well let players wear it. I don't see why a team should have sub-rules around it. If the number's not retired, let anyone wear it.
Well, that's the thing. Like, if you're expecting, say, Ginla and maybe Kiprusoff and Fleury's numbers to actually get retired, you've only got, like, three, four options every year, maybe. And... you know, it just gets too complicated, so why not have a few players that buck the trend and have 67 or 93 or 52.
And to me too, maybe this sounds weird, but when a guy gets traded, I like there to be a little bit of a cooling off period with that number. You know, like when Dion left, I like that nobody wore three right away. And, you know, the way the Flames were heading with their 35 numbers is pretty much, okay, we traded you for, you know, Weidman, so you have to wear six because it's all we got. So the new jersey numbers for the upcoming season, as the Flames have announced them now, Michael Frolik will be going back to his usual number 67 that we've seen him so popularly with. I believe he's the first Flames player to wear 67 in a regular season game. Dougie Hamilton, no surprise, will be wearing number 27. The guy that everyone was wondering what number he'd wear, Sam Bennett. We know that he wears number 93 to honor his hero, Doug Gilmour. And everyone was curious if he'd wear 39 or 93 here, since Gilmour wore 39. It's announced that Bennett has been given a full-time number of 93. Brian Bolig will be going back to the number he was used to, which was 52. They converted him because of the rule last year to 25, which is now the forever aflame Joe Nieuwendyk number. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's vacant this year. And Josh Juris finally got a full-time number too. He was wearing the training camp number of 86 last year, and now he'll be number 16. And some people have noted that Michael Ferland didn't get a number, but as of right now, Ferland hasn't been signed, so that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, and I would expect that once his contract's finalized that his number would get announced.
The one guy I'm surprised didn't get announced with a number, and remember too that sometimes the Flames give numbers to players that aren't NHL players, but, you know, or at AHL levels. We've seen AHL players, I think like Wotherspoon last year, had a number and that sort of thing. I was surprised Granlund didn't get issued a full-time number.
Well, he's one of those guys that is in competition to make the NHL, and I think that, like, if he does, then he will. Like, I remember last year in training camp or the development camp or something that Gaudreau was still wearing number 53, and it wasn't until he made the team that he was issued number 13.
Yeah, that's true. But we've also had guys like Wotherspoon and Potter who have been issued numbers when they've come in right away, even knowing they probably wouldn't start here. So, I don't know, I kind of look at it that if you're one of the guys in competition, they generally give you a number, so it's kind of surprising he wasn't.
Yeah, probably motivation, like earn it.
Maybe.
Or he just likes that number.
62? Maybe.
Isn't he 60?
Oh, was he 60? Okay. Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm thinking 26 on the farm, and then I was, for some reason, switching around. Yeah, maybe he likes 60. You never know. Now I guess it's a legal number, so I guess I'm glad to see that they can wear any number they want now. You know, that wasn't the case for a while. And if anyone ended up going out last year and buying a number 27 Berchi jersey, you can go get it recrested to be a Hamilton jersey. Fortunately, they have a 47 Berchi jersey too. But I don't know. Like, to me, that was such a unique number. And I always like it. Like, guys like Frolik, who just have this unique number that nobody else has, I always think that's cool.
I wonder if TJ Brody will go back to his old number 66.
That was his training camp number, wasn't it?
No, he played in the NHL with it.
But that's what I mean, though. Yeah, like he got it at camp, but he didn't wear it in junior or anything.
No.
And I think he even said that he didn't much like that number.
Yeah.
The Flames website is outdated because they show that nobody's ever worn 66, which is incorrect. They're just trying to hide that from the record. But yeah, according to the Flames website, number 67 has never been worn in a regulation game, and only one other player has ever worn 93, and that was when Mike Camilleri made his brief reappearance here and wore it for, I think, like 20 games.
Yeah, something like that.
And according to the site, nobody's ever worn 52, so some new numbers for the Flames, which is cool. I think it's cool when there's high numbers splattered in there.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't look like the Montreal Canadiens where they're all high numbers, then that kind of gets a little odd.
Yeah, and I was really, really curious what Frolik would wear when he came here, because he's always been 67, so I'm glad that he got his number.
Same here.
Well, Matt, we've talked about the new contracts, the players that are coming in or coming back, and we also have a handful of guys who've left the organization. I'll just run through these quickly. Let me know if you have comments on any of them. Sina Akalatsi, who the Flames brought in sort of an experiment last year. He's a young defenseman. He came from the San Jose organization. He's off to the Panthers. Rafael Diaz, who we signed late in the offseason last year. He came in just for training camp and I think had a pretty good season. Showed that he should be at the NHL level. He's off to the Rangers. I think he signed a deal worth over $1 million there. So good for him. Mark Kandari, who you know that I haven't been a big fan of Kandari's. He's really the last piece of the Bouwmeester deal as far as actual players go. He's off to the Sharks. John Ramage, who the Flames did not qualify, got a one-year two-way deal with Columbus. Brian McGrattan, who we both thought would be done his NHL career, is going back to Anaheim where he's played in the past. He got a one-year two-way deal with the Ducks. And the Flames traded Max Reinhardt to Nashville for a conditional fourth-round pick.
Yeah, and I do believe that that fourth-round pick is if Reinhardt plays in the NHL, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
Nothing's been released there. I would imagine because he was an RFA, it was probably if he was signed.
Yeah.
Because we'll the Flames hadn't signed him yet.
Yeah. They've already assigned him an NHL number. I think he's wearing number 26 this year. So I'm assuming that like they're expecting him to play in the NHL. And they did trade Taylor Beck to Toronto. So that opens up that fourth line roster spot. So I'm expecting that they'll put Reinhardt in the fourth line to start the year.
You know me, I've said since the beginning of this last season that I thought Reinhardt was on his way out. You know, I think guys like Juris have jumped over in the depth chart, and I was surprised at the trade deadline that he was still a Flames contract. But when I saw this deal, I was not surprised it happened. I guess I was just surprised that he was moved for a conditional pick. Like, I think a fourth-round pick is the right value for him, but I'm just curious what that condition is because I'd hate to have nothing back for him.
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm figuring that it's if he plays in the NHL, we get a fourth because that's the only threshold that I would expect that would make sense.
So, you know, Reinhardt, I think, still a good player. I think he's still, you know, got some upside to him, and hopefully he'll realize his potential in Nashville and maybe get an NHL job there because I think that he was moving down the Flames depth chart quickly here.
Well, the thing is that the Flames do have about 25 players that could play in the NHL, not necessarily this year, but moving forward. And you've only got 20 roster spots.
Mm-hmm.
So some of these players are going to have to be traded. And the good thing is that Treliving has been able to trade two of them for assets that actually have value. And like we've already acquired Rasmus Anderson for the Berchi pick. And who knows what that fourth round pick will turn into. So, at least we're moving players out that we don't think will make the NHL on Calgary and getting value for them instead of just letting them walk away.
Yeah, or losing them on waivers. I mean, I'd rather get a fourth round pick for Reinhardt, which, like I said, I think is a fair price for him. We didn't get a good deal. We got a fair price and get something out of it than, you know, we lost him on waivers.
Exactly. And like, is Reinhardt's departure going to impact the Flames at all? No. But that's, you know, he's still a decent player and can be a use to another team. It's just for whatever reason, the Flames seem to have, like, 10 players at each position that are all good. So, you know, you take the best of the bunch and you trade the rest.
Yeah, and I think that last year with, you know, Reinhardt really not getting the calls that some of the other guys at his position were from the AHL, I think it showed that he's moving down that chart. And as I said last year, I think that now is the time to move him while there's still value there. He's a good player, but I think that if he stays in the AHL too long, we wouldn't be able to get that kind of value.
Exactly. And the Flames getting picks also will help in the future. Like, you saw with the Hawks having to trade Brandon Saad, the Flames are going to have that same issue where they've got their core players, but they also have very good secondary players that are going to require high contracts as well that they won't be able to afford. So down the road, we're going to have to trade some of those secondary players off and have good young players replacing them. So having more draft picks will allow the Flames to have that pipeline continuously full, so that way we can just continue being a contending team, sort of like Chicago, where we can just roll over assets, time after time, and not really skip a beat.
Yeah, and I hadn't really thought about this until just now, but if you kind of look at the position that Reinhart was in, not just the position he plays in the ice, but the position that he kind of held within the team, I think that they probably knew they were making that trade, and that's probably why Derek Grant was brought in, to be sort of that veteran guy. I mean, Reinhart's been around the Flames organization for a couple of years. He's really more that veteran guy. So I think that Grant probably replaces Reinhart in that way.
Yeah, that makes sense. Getting the same kind of result from a slightly older player. So why not?
Yeah, and only on a 1 year. If Grant turns out well, they can always, bring him back. But, I just think it was the time where they're saying Reinhart is probably a good player, but maybe not for what we need right now. Let's try something new. Let's bring in Grant and see how it works.
Yeah, and if you look at the Flames roster, they already have 17 forwards that are, they didn't stand out as being particularly bad at the NHL level last year. So, do you see Reinhart jumping over any of them?
No.
So, what good is he other than being a veteran AHL player? Well, you can get value for him and just go sign somebody else, which they did.
Exactly. Going into last season, if we had this conversation this time last year, I would have told you that I thought Reinhart was number one on the depth chart as far as young forwards. Maybe number two or three. I think it was probably him and Granlund we'd all be looking at. But, if you would have asked me, do you think Ferland and Juris would be difference makers at the NHL level, there's no way I would have agreed with that.
No. And that's the thing. The development of prospects is not a linear process. Players can just jump out of nowhere, and you're going, where did that come from? Like Boma last year, I didn't expect any more than 3 or 4 goals from
Nobody
him,
did.
And he puts up 16. Awesome, but that's good. But you can't label players, I'm expecting Juris to come in and be awesome. Even this year, I don't know what he is as a player. So we have to wait and see.
Another contract here that I wanted to point out of the players leaving is congrats to Brian McGrattan for securing another NHL deal. He got a 1-year two-way deal with the Ducks. I don't expect him to see a lot of NHL time, but I was kind of worried that no one would sign him and he'd be retiring, so good for him for keeping his career going.
Yeah, and the Flames did say that they had offered him an office position, so if he didn't get a contract, that that was always a feasibility, and the distance from Anaheim to their farm team isn't very much, so even if he does go to the AHL, I think their farm team's in San Diego, so...
Yeah, I'm totally confused by the new California division. I don't know who's where.
Yeah, I know LA's with Ontario, and us in Stockton and San Jose is playing in the same building.
Yeah, and somebody's got... Yeah, the San Diego Gulls, is that where...
Yeah, so, the distance from Anaheim to San Diego isn't that far, so... even... if he is in the AHL, he can still be somewhat metropolitan, instead of in the Adirondack.
And, his wife is still in Calgary, and, they're both on the same coast, so that's going to make things easier there if he needs to fly back and forth, that sort of thing. But, yeah, congrats to him for getting another contract. I know he'll probably forever be a Flames favorite, and I really didn't want him to retire, but I thought he might have to just because I didn't know if he'd get another deal, so... Congrats to him for earning another contract.
Yes, and when he does hang him up, if he wants to come back to Calgary in some capacity, I think that both the fans and the organization would be more than happy to have him.
I think there will always be a position for him in the Flames organization, unless he does something really stupid. But, you know, the way it sits right now, I think he'll be one of those guys between the Flames and the Hitmen. There will always be some sort of position for him.
Yep. And it's always good to see good people succeed. So good on you, McGrats, and keep going.
And the only other player that's sort of leaving that we should point out is David Wolf. David Wolf was re-signed by Calgary. His rights stay with the Flames, but he did not sign a deal with the Calgary Flames. He'll be going back to Germany and playing in the German league, but the Flames will retain his rights. So because we're not near the 50 contract mark, not much of a danger there. He and Chad Billings both are in that situation. And we'll be curious. I'll be curious to see what happens to Wolf. Do you think we'll ever see him back in North America for the Flames organization?
Honestly, I don't think so. And, you know, I like Wolf. I like him as a player, and I think he brings a lot that's necessary. But his foot speed just was not up to it. And, like, if you look at the games that he played against Anaheim in the playoffs, like, he was slow. And, like, he couldn't even get in to hit players like Ferland was. And that reduced his effectiveness down to nothing. And it's unfortunate. And, like, if Wolf can work on his skating back in Germany, I'd be more than happy to have him back. But, you know, sometimes that's not in the cards and you just move on.
I think last year the Flames were looking at Wolf as kind of being the next sort of McGrattan replacement after McGrattan got sent to the AHL. And I really think that the emergence we saw of Michael Ferland probably is what sealed the deal for Wolf, that he's not going to be on the NHL team. I think maybe they're saying, okay, we'll bring him in. He can be the 13th, 14th forward, whatever. We did see him get a few chances here with the Flames. But I think that the fact we've seen Ferland step into that role and have probably better offensive upside, they probably told Wolf, you know what, you're probably not going to get an NHL job next year.
Well, and at least he's going back to Germany to play in a professional league. So, you know, it might just be one of those situations where not right now, and he might be back. If he's not, it's not a huge loss because the Flames have so many quality players that, you know, we can plug in a guy like Austin Carroll or Hunter Smith into his role and be perfectly well-suited that way.
We can always move his contract later in the year, too, if we...
Well, we didn't sign him or Billings. We just have their rights.
So, sorry, like, their rights, not their contract.
Yeah, they don't count as contracts.
No, but we can trade their rights. They're still an asset to the team.
It's sort of like when the Flames acquired Romo. Like, Montreal didn't have him under contract. They just had his rights.
Now, can we, if we wanted to, correct me if I'm wrong, but we cannot go to Wolf and re-sign him mid-season and have him play this year, right? Once he's over there, he's pretty much over there
yes,
for the year.
We can, but he would have to clear waivers first.
Okay. Which I think... We all knew Romo wouldn't clear waivers. I think you'd probably be able to sneak David Wolf through waivers, depending on when you put him up.
What that whole Ryan O'Reilly fiasco back when we offer-sheeted him is because he played one game in Europe. So that's why like there was that danger of him going on waivers.
So, Matt, anything else about the departing players you want to mention?
No, just... glad to see McGrattan getting a job, and that's about it.
Any of those guys you're shocked to see move or get an NHL job?
No, on either count. They're serviceable AHL depth guys, the rest of the players that departed.
Notice that Setoguchi still doesn't have a job?
Yeah, I'm not surprised. And I'm not surprised that a guy like Ben Hanowski is out of a contract as well. Like, I could see both those players heading to Europe.
Yeah. I'm a little bit surprised Kandari got a deal with the Sharks. I thought he might pick up an AHL deal somewhere, but hopefully for him, he'll turn things around. Because I think, you know, I said this about his Flames deal, but I think he's getting to the end of his chances.
Yeah. I think, like, if he doesn't step up this year, I think he'll be heading to Europe himself.
Yeah. So another kind of interesting name that's still available, I think, is Curtis Glencross. It's July 27th as we record this, and Glencross is still an unrestricted free agent. Do you think Glencross is done as an NHL player? Do you think maybe he'll be a last-minute signing, sort of like Diaz was last year for somebody? What do you think his fate is?
I think he might end up becoming a training camp invite, not even getting an NHL contract until after the training camp is done and maybe even into the regular season.
But do you think that if he gets training camp invite, do you think he could make the league again next year? Do you think he's pretty much done?
I think he will play in the NHL at some point this year, but I'm beginning to wonder if he might end up having to start in the AHL and work his way back up.
I don't know if I would say that he'll probably be a training camp invite. I think that might be a little bit... I think you might be right there, but I think that might be a little bit... I guess on the pessimistic side, I think we have some teams out there that are in some cap issues right now. And I think once those cap issues get sorted out, I think we'll see Glencross get a home.
We'll see. It's one of those things that if all things were even and the Flames didn't have 17 contracts one way, I wouldn't even mind having him back necessarily.
Yeah, I think because you'd be bringing him back as a free agent, you could pay him properly. I think that he'll be lucky to get $1 million this coming year. But if you could bring Glencross back for $700,000-$800,000, it might not be worth, might be worth looking at.
Yeah. Well, even if you paid him $1.2 million, that wouldn't be bad.
Yeah.
It's just that, unfortunately, the Flames have so many players under contract that, unless you can shed three of them or four of them, you can't fit him in. And
I think with a lot of teams, there's still some wheeling and dealing left to do this year. So I wouldn't be surprised if somebody makes a trade, looks around and goes, crap, we got a hole. Let's call Curtis.
Yeah. And that's why I could see something more of a training camp invite and then him signing with either that team or another team.
Could be.
Because we saw Owen Nolan try out with the the Canucks, and then he signed elsewhere, after the training camp, because Vancouver didn't want him, but another team did.
Yeah, and we also saw last year even here in Calgary, where we had the Flames bring Rafael Diaz in. Nobody really thought he'd probably get a job, and he earned one, and he had a fairly good year, and now he's gone on to the Rangers, where he's got another NHL contract, so... maybe we see something like that for Glencross.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that he didn't have a good year last year with us. And when we traded him, we didn't even skip a beat. And he went to Washington and had a really terrible end of his season. So a lot of teams are probably a little leery of him falling off the cliff even more and being a Devin Setoguchi. So, that's why I would expect more of a training camp invite.
Yeah, and we also don't know what Glencross's camp is offering either. I could see Glencross's camp wanting, a $2-3 million deal still, and teams are saying we can't pay that.
Which, it's understandable. I'd be looking for as much dollars as possible, but, realistically, teams, the cap didn't go up as much as it, has in past years.
Yeah.
And teams just don't have the dollars to spend.
Exactly.
And he's not really showing more than most teams' young players, so he has to prove it.
Yeah. And you're right, he may end up doing a stint in the AHL next year.
Which, if you would have said that to me at this time last year, I would have thought you were crazy, but stuff happens.
Really, it's weird if you look at it. A guy like Josh Juris probably secures an NHL spot this year, and a guy like Curtis Glencross might be relegated to the AHL.
I know. Crazy things happen.
The other big name that's still available is Cody Franzen, another big name defenseman. We've heard a few times from a few different sources this summer that the Flames are interested. Do you think we might see Franzen coming here to round out our top four on the back end?
I'd like it, but I don't see the Flames having enough cap space to actually make it work.
When I'm looking at the calendar saying it's July 27th and Cody Franzen is still available, the only logical thing I can think of is Franzen asking for a lot of money. And if that's the case, I hope the Flames walk away.
Yeah, like I wouldn't want him more than like $3.5-4 million personally.
Well, that's it. If you look at the rest of the cap and where things are at, if you think that even Brody's making, you know, just over $4 million, I don't think I'd pay Franzen any more than $3.5 million.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, the Flames also have to look forward to next year where they have guys like, you know, Gaudreau, Monahan, Hudler, Giordano all coming off contracts. And, you know, you might end up having to lose a player or two of those guys. And, you know, that's, you know, do you want to spend money on a guy like Franzen at the expense of, say, Hudler? And to me, no.
I think if you could get Franzen in on a short deal, like 2-3 years, it might be worth doing. But I think a guy like him, and the fact he's still a free agent, probably says he's looking long-term big money.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that, like, if the Flames did sign Franzen, then I think during the season you'd have to trade both Weidman and Russell as well. So, you know, and that comes into the equation as well.
If we don't get Franzen at this point, to me, I'm not worried. We've got our guy in Hamilton. You know, I think it's almost being a little bit greedy trying to get them both.
Yeah, exactly.
I think if we didn't have Hamilton, yeah, you allocate that money to Franzen and run with it. But we've got our guy in the back end. I think that we kind of have to let our defense shake out the way it will now with the pieces we have.
Yeah, and the thing is that the Flames do need to have roster spots available because of the fact that you got Morrison, Waterspoon, Kulak, Culkin, all pushing for NHL spots as soon as this season. So, you know, having too many dollars tied up in players, you know, like the Flames farm system was weak in defense, but now it's becoming a strength, and you're going to need those same roster spots that we had for the forwards last year. And, you know, if you tie up for the spots between Brody, Hamilton, say Franzen and Giordano, you know you don't have the proper opportunities to allow guys like Waterspoon and that to come in and steal a spot, especially when you have like $10 million tied up in your 5, 6, 7 guys.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings on that. I mean, you know, you do want to give those guys an opportunity for sure, but I also think you can't leave spaces open for them too much, because otherwise you get to a point where it's like, crap, we left a space open, you know, so-and-so's not performing the way we expected them to, now we're stuck. So I think there's a fine balance between leaving space open and saying, hey, if you want the spot, take it from one of our regulars.
True.
Matt, as we sort of wrap up our off-season look and look ahead to training camp in September, what do you think? Do you think we're going to see anything else happen this summer?
I think, like, other than Ferland getting signed and maybe trading off a roster player or two for draft picks, like, say, like a guy like Mason Raymond, that's about the only thing I'd expect. Like, we do have a bit of a roster crunch, but it'll be largely sorted out, I think, in training camp. More than anything.
Yeah, either in camp or after camp.
Because that, like, every team is that has, like, a roster spot or two open up is looking at, well, can our young players come in and take that? And, like, if they can't, then
they're going to be looking around for veteran help.
Exactly. And, like, I'm sure that you could get, like, a fourth or something for guys like Raymond Bolig or, you know, whomever, if need be. So, we'll see. Like, I don't expect all the players that are currently under contract for the NHL to be there once the puck drops in October.
No. But I think as far as summer moves, I think the Flames are pretty much done.
Yeah. Like, other than maybe a training camp invite or two, like, I could even see the Flames inviting Glenn Cross to camp, even if we're not planning on signing him. But, you know, just wait and see.
Well, you know, yeah, I guess that's probably the next time we'll talk. I'm just kind of looking at the calendar here, and we'll probably talk next, probably just before camp opens.
Yeah, likely after the Penticton tournament.
So, Matt, you enjoy the rest of your summer. I hope we continue to have nice weather here in Calgary.
Yeah. Hopefully the bathroom renovation that I'm doing will be finished.
I hope so. You've been working on that for a while. And we will talk to you again once the rinks are frozen.
Fireside Chat is edited by Mike Crosby and Brett Bauer. This show is licensed under Creative Commons license. For full license information, visit firesidechat.ca.